Number 4,
chapter 29, text 23 to 25. The chapter title talks between Narad Muni and King Prachinabharhi. Adhyayo Adhyajayo Yadhyasya Tasya Sainikayavanaschara Bhutopa Sarga Suraya Prajvaro Dvividojara. Read them out. Evam Bahu Vidher Dukher Deva Bhutatma Sambhuvahe Klishyamanah Satam Varsam Dehi Dehi Tamovratah Pranandriya Mano Dharmam Atmane Adhyayasya Nirguna Sete Kama Lavam Dhyayam Mamaham Iti Karmat Krita. Translation by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The followers of Yamaneshwar, that is Yamraj, are called the soldiers of death, and they are known as the various types of disturbances that pertain to the body and mind. Prajvara represents the two types of fever, extreme heat and extreme cold, typhoid and pneumonia. The living entity lying down within the body is disturbed by many turbulations pertaining to providence, to other living entities, and to his own body and mind. Despite all kinds of turbulations, the living body, subjected to the necessities of the body, mind and senses, and suffering from various types of disease, is carried away by many plans due to his lust to enjoy the world. Although transcendental to this material existence, the living entity, out of ignorance, accepts all these material miseries under the pretext of false egoism, I and mine. In this way, he lives for 100 years within this body. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the Vedas it is stated, asangoyam purushaha. The living entity is actually separate from material existence, for the soul is not material. In Bhagavad Gita it is also said that the living entity is the superior energy, and the material elements, earth, water, fire, air and so on, are the inferior energy. The material elements are also described as vinna or separated energy. When the internal or superior energy comes in contact with the external energy, it is subjected to so many tribulations. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord also says, Matra sparshatu kunteya sitoshna sukhadukhesha agamapo yeno nityas tam titikshasva bharataha. O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O sense of Bharat, O skyon of Bharat, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. Bhagavad Gita 2.14. Because of the material body, the living entity is subjected to many tribulations brought about by air, water, fire, extreme heat, extreme cold, sunshine, excessive eating, unhealthy food, maladjustments of the three elements of the body, kapha, pith and vayu, and so on. The intestines, the throat, the brain, and other parts of the body are affected by all kinds of diseases that are so powerful that they become sources of extreme suffering for the living entity. The living entity, however, is different from all these material elements. The two types of fever described in this verse can be explained in contemporary language as pneumonia and typhoid. When there is an extreme fever in the body, there is typhoid and pneumonia, and they are described as prajvara. There are also other miseries created by other living entities. The state extracts taxes, and there are also many thieves, rogues and cheaters. Miseries brought about by other living entities are called adibhautika. There are also miseries in the form of famine, pestilence, scarcity, war, earthquakes, and so on. These are caused by the demigods or other sources beyond our control. Actually, there are many enemies of the living entities, and these are all described to point out how miserable this material existence is. Knowing the basic misery of material existence, one should be induced to get out of the material clutches and return home back to Godhead. Actually, the living entity is not at all happy in this material body. Because of the body, he suffers thirst and hunger, and is influenced by the mind, by words, by anger, by the belly, by the genitals, by the rectum, and so on. Manifold miseries encircle the transcendental living entity simply because he desires to satisfy his senses in this material world. If he simply withdraws from activities of sense gratification and applies his senses in the service of the Lord, all the problems of material existence will immediately diminish. And with the advancement of Krishna consciousness, he will be freed from all tribulations, and after giving up the body, will return home back to Godhead. So the shloka is, the followers of, has explained what is given in these three shlokas. The important words in this shloka are that we all suffer as living entities because we are encaged in bodies. We have born and we have gone through 8.4 million different types of bodies. And we've been conditioned because we've gone through all those bodies. If you go on the street, sometimes some people will say, this man is eating like a pig. That's a fact. Because he has been through a pig body. I've seen people eat volumes of material on the street. Maybe on a plate, sometimes it's fallen on the floor also. But because they paid for it, they'll pick it up. And therefore, we find that a person has gone through that conditioning over and over and over and over and over again. When they train a person in the army, they do the same thing. They condition the person to keep on marching and marching, marching and marching, morning, night. They keep on training, training, training. So that his mind gets conditioned to tremendous amount of discipline. What we are doing here is also a similar type of discipline. We are conditioning our mind to chanting. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. This disciplining of the mind which Prabhupada taught us is most, most important, because we have been indisciplined for all these 84 lakh or 8.4 million unis. Because we've been indisciplined, it's very difficult to get back into discipline.
And therefore, we have to go through these 16 minimum rounds a day and follow the four regulative principles, offer everything to Krishna and not commit those 10 offenses. It's very simple for the simple and very difficult for the difficult. It is difficult actually to start with because of the previous conditioning. One day, Prabhupada told a story from the Aesop's fable, because he used to sometimes take stories from various books just to illustrate a point very clearly. And since we've all gone through childhood and we've enjoyed these Aesop fable stories, it becomes natural for us to appreciate something which we have gone through. Something which we are not gone through, it comes as a surprise to us, as a shock to us. Supposing when I had been first to New Vrindavan, and there was no geyser, 1978 November 22nd, Radhanand Maharaj 2:30 in the morning had a bath, and I woke up and I heard that sound and I thought, what is this? Then I saw he was having a bath after 2 hours of rest. I said, I must also show that we from Bombay are not less. So I went in the bath without realizing that the temperature of the water was just above 1 degree centigrade. It was ice cold, absolutely ice cold. But it was charming because you suddenly wake up totally. So we were not used to it. So it becomes like a burning sensation actually. Very hot water. It's surprising. So here we come to Prabhupada's Aesop fable. There, what happened was that there was a king of the jungle, that's a lion. And he is the ruler of his kingdom. And all the animals are subjected to his jurisdiction. But one day, this lion came across the fox and he said, Mr. Fox, what is this? I am the king. You are not paying any taxes to me, nothing. You are not coming even, not offering your obeisances, not looking at me even. What is wrong with you? He said, sir, there is nothing wrong with you or me or anybody. I am minding my own business. He said, no, you come to my den, lion's den. So the fox looked at the lion and he said, sir, I'll come tomorrow if you don't mind, not today. So the lion said, you are very, very shrewd. Tomorrow will never come. You come now. He says, today I'm sorry, I will not be able to make it. So why? Why are you not coming all these years? So he said, to tell you the truth, I'm seeing there are so many footprints of animals going into the den, but I don't see any footprints coming out. So the lion looked at him and realized that this was a cunning fox and his breakfast was spoiled and he would not come in. Sometimes, Prabhupada used to say, we have to have the intelligence or the shrewdness of a fox. We must not get in the clutches of the lion-like jaws of lust, maya. Because here it is stated very clearly in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The actual words used are, carried away by many plans due to his lust to enjoy the world. Actually speaking, throughout the Bhagavad Gita you will realize that Lord Krishna is also mentioning to Arjun that it is lust and lust alone. Then later on he says lust, anger and greed. These are the three royal slippery roads, royal roads to hell. They are nice and sliding downwards, so you don't have to make an effort also. So these things do happen naturally, because what happens is most of us have gone through youth. Of course, some of us are very old, but anyway, most of us have gone through this youth period when there is a natural attraction for a young boy for a young girl and a young girl for a young man. Prabhupada says it's a natural attraction. Why? Because they are both encased in a body. If that boy saw a living entity who was not in a female form, another living entity, either a cat or a dog or whatever it is, that type of attraction would not be there. It is the positive and negative magnets which are attracting each other. It is stated that the man's body is like a positive magnet and the woman's body is like a negative magnet, because the man gets too quickly into lust. The woman takes a longer time to get attracted by lust. By the nature only it is like that. However, if you have been trained and disciplined by a proper bona fide spiritual master, then you know that by intelligence and by knowledge, which is also mentioned in this shloka, it says, although transcendental to the material existence, who the jivatma, living entity, out of ignorance accepts all these material miseries. So when you are not in ignorance, om ajnanati virandasya jnana jana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri guruve nama. I offer my obeisances to that guru who anoints my eyes with the ointment of knowledge, so that I get out of ignorance. It's very difficult to get out of ignorance, because you fall again into ignorance. The living entity is always forgetful. It's somewhat like, you know, you go to a certain place at night in the darkness, then in the morning somebody says, come on, let's go to that same place. You won't be able to go there, because you've forgotten. You don't remember how many steps you took to the left, how many steps you took to the right. You couldn't see all the road marks, whether there was a shop here or there or what. You are in darkness because the jivatma is within, and there is darkness within. You see, the jivatma is in the heart, residing in the heart. There is no electricity bulb inside or tube light. It is inside, way inside the carcasses of the body. But if he turns to Paramatma, then he gets the light. That is the whole point. He just has to switch on the light. Means he has to just go towards the light, Paramatma. But most of us, because we do not wish to have anything to do with Paramatma, we want to enjoy separately from him, we want to enjoy in the material world, we turn to that direction. And these forms of lust will always come to all of us, without fail, because this place, this material world, is a place where lust is given very, very cheaply. It's very difficult to get Krishna consciousness, very difficult, Hare Krishna, to get a bona fide spiritual master. But it's very easy to get this lust, anger and greed, because it's available freely. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so kind, he was so munificent, that he freely distributed the love of God. Till that time nobody distributed freely the love of God. And it is this teaching of Lord Chaitanya which actually can defeat these powerful forces of lust, anger and greed, which even a personality like Vishwamitra, having done 10,000 years of tapasya, tapeti tapasya, means voluntarily taking upon himself such terrible heat, tapas, tapa means heat of austerities, and still he fell down. He has to fall down, because the desire remains in the mind. Lust resides in the mind. It is a permanent tenant of the mind. Lust demands of the mind that do this. And the mind stupidly does not listen to the intellect, does not listen to Paramatma, does not listen to the Guru, Sadhu and Shastra at that weak moment. There is always a weak moment, remember. All of us have faced it, without fail. This weak moment will come, and at that weak moment, you shall have tremendous urge. It's somewhat like these alcoholics. Due to certain reason, one of my relatives was an alcoholic. So I had to go with him to Alcoholic Anonymous at Woodhouse Road. There is a Holy Name Church, which is a sort of center for Alcoholic Anonymous. Later on, I even took Radhanath Maharaj with me. because I found that they had certain potency, spiritual potency. They were able to cure alcoholics. How? Because these alcoholics would then disclose their great hardships and how they went into the trap of this chemical dependency, of the urge of drinking even one drop of alcohol. One drop of alcohol for an alcoholic is enough to make him slide down the royal road to hell again. And what do? They have the serenity prayers. Lord, I have no control. Basically what they are saying is, I have no control on my senses. Means, you are the Rishikesha Rishikena Sevaya Bhakti Uchate. You are the only one who can really help me. Nobody can help me. I have no control on my senses. It's a fact. Because the Jivata is so small, so tiny, 1/10,000th of a tip of a hair. 1/10,000th of a tip of a hair, I asked once an atomic physicist, that how much is the size of that? He said, well, let me calculate. And he calculated in terms of microns. And then he went into 10^-9 power, which is very, very small. Then he said, I don't have an electron microscope. Otherwise, I might be able to tell you. I said, you won't be able to. There is no electron microscope created by mankind which can see the Jivatma. It's not possible because the Jivatma is spiritual. And it's so small that no material telescope or material microscope or whatever scope, there is no scope for seeing the Jivatma. There is just no scope. The Jivatma is beyond the scope of material measurement. That's why the Vedas say 10,000th of a tip of a hair. And it is true. Because the Jivatma is so small, it simultaneously resides, it moves around, it goes from the heart, the mind moves to the heart, the mind becomes a permanent resident of this lust, it captures the intelligence, one breaks down one's own intelligence, goes to dogs, as they say, and then the mind makes it appear that, hey, you've been missing this wonderful thing all your life. You just weren't having a good time. You were having a bad time so far. And you forget that you had a bad time for 84 lakh unis. You forget. Because the mind plays these tricks. It's somewhat like Prabhupada gives a beautiful example of the mirage in the ocean, desert. In the desert, I have been to just outside Dubai, for instance, and it's absolutely nothing growing there. At least in Dubai there are a few plants and trees. But once you go out 25 kilometers, there's nothing but sand, 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 up and down. Not one blade of grass. And then I wanted to see for myself a mirage. So I went out in the afternoon, which is very hot, and I saw for myself that it does look like, you know, lot of nice water, wonderful cool water, is hardly a little distance away. And the poor deer or animal will keep on going, going, because of, does not have a superior knowledge. It's ignorant that in a desert there will not be any water. So I was reading one book, and in that book it is stated that I believe the name of the author was Vidyanidhi. Vidyanidhi says that there is happiness in this world. It came as a surprise to me, because I was told so far, I was thinking so far, that in this world there is no happiness, real true happiness. He said, no, there is a true happiness. Because you get sometimes a little bit of true happiness, like in Kirtan, you will experience some true happiness. Therefore, you think there is always happiness. But Vidyanidhi explains that this so-called true happiness which you experience is like a little drop of water which goes in the mouth of a thirsty man who has traveled the whole day in the desert. What is the value of that one drop of water for a person whose mouth is totally parched with thirst? because he's been walking and walking the whole day in the sand, and at the end of the day somebody says, okay, I'm giving you one little drop of water. That's it. I mean, that's of no value, that's of no use. This is what happens. Maya gives us a little bit, a little tiny bit of happiness, gives us a chance, and you feel, ah, that scratch was so nice. That lust is just like a scratch on the skin, as Prabhupada explains. I think it is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam also. So, what happened is that this huge loss which we've had, I calculated once, because I love mathematics, this 8.4 million lifetimes we might have gone through. So we've gone through the bodies of insects, aquatics, birds, bees, trees, animals. On an average, statistics, those statistics can fool us. You know the famous joke, in statistics they say the man is very comfortable if his head is in the refrigerator and his foot is in the burning oven. But the average is 86 degrees. So it's very, very simple. But it's not like that. But here the calculation is that about 250 million years we've been away from Krishna consciousness. 250 million years. I worked it out that if on an average you had 30 years between animal life, man life, some trees go up to 200 years, 500 years, 1000 years. Some insects, morning they are born, afternoon they are married, evening they are old grandparents, at night they die also. So if you average it all out, it comes to approximately 30 years by method of mathematical statistics. And 8.4 million multiplied by 30 will come to this figure of 250 million years we've been away from Krishna consciousness. That is the big, big loss we have suffered in not associating with Krishna. It is a loss. To a businessman, losing interest for one day is a loss. Losing interest for 1 year is a fiasco. And losing interest for a lifetime is a total waste. But here we are talking of 250 million years we have lost our association with Krishna. Now what is the guarantee that we will get our association with Krishna? Krishna himself guarantees. It's like getting a bank guarantee from the State Bank of India, the largest bank. Krishna gives a guarantee that whatever bhakti you do in this lifetime, that alone is to your credit, eternally. It can never be erased, because bhakti cannot be erased by any material action. No acid can erase it or contaminate it. Nothing can contaminate bhakti. But all the others, karma, can be affected by subsequent vikarma. You see, if you have dhyan yoga, just sitting around meditating on the Lord, fine. But because you are originally aham brahmasmi, because we are originally Brahman, we can very easily associate with the supreme Brahman, Parabrahma Param Dham Pavitram, that is Krishna. But at that stage, but because of desire remains in us, even from that Brahman stage we fall down. But if that desire is transcendentalized, means converted or Krishnaized, as Krishna, Prabhupada used to say, just turn that whole thing around from a negative direction to a positive direction. Now how do we do that? By chanting, by associating with devotees, by eating prasadam, by residing in a transcendental place of bhakti, where there are deities, by daily reading this Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, chanting regularly. That is how one slowly, slowly, because it's been so long, 250 million years is a hell of a long time, and truly it is hell. The fact is to turn that whole ship around from such a large angle of 250 million towards Krishna takes a Herculean effort, and therefore we are eternally, eternally grateful to Prabhupada who took so much pain right through his life, right through his youth, when he grew old, he was nearly 69, nearly 70 years old when he left India. At that age, at the age of 70, I am now 65 today. I know what it is. Old age is horrible. It's a misery. It's a pain. Only pain. And as you get older, it becomes more pain. All sorts of pains and aches all over the place. Daytime, nighttime, anytime. And Prabhupada went to New York. I have been many, many times to New York. It's the most vibrant city, according to me, in the world. There is a lot of passion. But unfortunately, that also happens to be the capital of Maya, in the sense that he was in the Bowery. He was in the, what is that, near the 2nd Avenue, right down in that place where there were these drunkards in those days. And it was so bad. I mean, one wouldn't like to travel in those areas during a daytime in New York. What to speak of living there? Prabhupada lived there. For whom? Not for himself. Only for the order of his spiritual master. He had full faith in the order of his spiritual master. His spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami, said, "You preach in the English speaking part of the world." So he was there in the English speaking part of the world. And he was preaching. But he was attracting all sorts of people. Some good, some bad also. That's part of the game. That's part of the deal, as they say. You get, you know, it comes as it's served. You can't choose in this world what you want. There's not a, yes, in the spiritual world you can choose. It's very easy in the spiritual world. That is what Prabhupada has taught us. In the spiritual world, your desires are spiritual, your desires are only to please Krishna, and therefore you are given full choice of good things to choose from. In this material world, your desires are material, therefore you are under jurisdiction of Maya, and therefore she decides what you will get and not get, and not you. So you may desire to be rich, but you can be very, very poor. You may desire to be very pretty. A woman always likes to be very pretty when she is young. But unfortunately, she may get pimples all over the place or whatever. So it will happen, you see. And there is no choice. And then the doctor may give some sort of steroids and then it gets worse. Because it will melt the bones only. And it will go from the frying pan to the fire. This is what happens in this material world. You try to solve one problem, you get 10 other bigger problems on your neck. And you are then buried in that problem. And to come out of that problem is a bigger headache. And therefore you have to take more medicines or whatever you have to take. And this makes it a never-ending cycle. To break that cycle, one has to go back to the roots. Before that 250 million years, what was it? We were spiritual, we were in the spiritual world. It's unfortunate that we had a material desire to separately enjoy from Krishna because we were envious of Krishna on that day, 250 million years ago. We could not stand why Krishna is enjoying so much and not me. I, the great little Jivatma, must enjoy more. Krishna said, "Okay, by all means, go down, enjoy. I've got a special provision for you, special place for you. Enjoy as much as you want and see what happens." And we did it. We came down. And the fortunate, and you know, Prabhupada says, I think it came, I was reading the earlier pages of this chapter to prepare for this. Prabhupada says that originally we, because our desires, excuse me, originally our desires were to enjoy all our senses simultaneously. All the senses we want to enjoy to the maximum. That is human spirit. We want optimization of everything. We want maximization of everything. All these pundits in all these business schools will teach you how to optimize your profits, how to maximize your cash flow, etc., etc. So we wanted to maximize our sense flow. We wanted to maximize our sense gratification. So Prabhupada says you are given the human form of body as a man, woman, or as a demigod. That is the first body he gives. It is very fortunate if at that stage you cut off and you meet a spiritual master and you say, oh my, I made a big blunder, let me go back again. That means you are going back right from stage one, before that 250 million year thing started. But whatever it be, therefore when devotees used to ask Srila Prabhupada, how long we have been here, how long this has happened? Honestly, Prabhupada didn't know whether that man had just come from the spiritual world or that man had come after finishing his 250 million years. And he didn't want to speculate. Therefore he said, don't worry about that. Just chant and get out of this. This world is like a toilet. Finish your business, flush out and get out. Don't look back. Otherwise, your next form of a pig is guaranteed. That is the axiom. That is the bottom line. If you look back at your stool and you think that your stool is very nice, fine, there you are. And then you can have a selection of stools, dry stool, wet stool. Prabhupada and one devotee were talking and that devotee said, Prabhupada, does a pig discriminate? Prabhupada said, of course he discriminates. The Jivatma has a capacity to discriminate. But his discrimination is so limited to only stool. Dry stool is bad, wet stool is very, very yummy. So what to do? What to do? But in the human form of life, our spectrum of discrimination becomes very wide, because it's only possible in the human form of life that we can raise ourselves to the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. No dog, cat, I have tried, but we have not got that capacity. Only Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had that. Therefore he is Krishna. Only Krishna can do certain things which we cannot do. You see, we have tried, you try. My great friend Mahaprabhu Das had a dog. Do you know this? At Khar, there was a dog. And in the early days, we were all feeling, you know, that we are great devotees. This is maybe about 1978 or 79. Mahaprabhu took initiation in 79 March, that is Gaur Purnima. Thereafter, he was full of, you know, enthusiasm. He still is. And I remember he converted his garage, put the car out. He told Giriraj Maharaj that I am building a temple here. Maharaj was very intelligent. Maharaj said, oh, really? You know, Giriraj Maharaj, his style. Very nice, Mahaprabhu, very nice. He got DTs and he started a temple in the garage. It's still there. Now what happened is, because there was prasadam distribution, naturally, dog would come, one dog. But this dog was so smart, he would sit right through the kirtan, right through the Bhagavatam class, have his prasadam and then go. Every time, every Friday evening. Because that was the evening, Friday evening. So Mahaprabhu was feeling very, very proud, you know. That like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one dog at least, I have been able to make him chant and sing and glorify God and eat prasadam. Maybe he will go home back to Godhead. I said, yeah, sure, he may go home back to Godhead. Then we both asked Giriraj Maharaj, what is your opinion, Giriraj Maharaj? Because he was our Siksha Guru. He said, Mahaprabhu, you try it on Monday and see what happens. When there is no kirtan, there is no Bhagavatam and there is no prasad, just call that dog and see whether he is going to listen to your Bhagavatam without the prasad. Is he coming only for the food or is he coming for the kirtan and pravachan? For instance, we have Ekadashi sometimes, isn't it? I mean, I saw this calendar yesterday. This year, 04, 2004, maximum Ekadashis are going to come on Sunday. So our Sunday feast is gone for Ekadashi, for a 6. So, or for an 11. So the thing is that we will have to fast on a feast day. And we'll be happy to fast on a feast day, no problem. Because we want to glorify Ekadashi. You all read that book, no? Ekadashi, Mahatme. It's a wonderful book.
on Ekadashi, all the Ekadashis. So Ekadashi was actually a lady devotee, and she prayed to Lord Vishnu, and it was therefore glorified by Lord Vishnu himself that devotees will glorify you and will practice Ekadashi, and on Dwadashi they will only partake of prasadam and they will fast on Ekadashi. There are many types of Ekadashis. Of course, the most important Ekadashi is coming on the 30th of May. That's a glorious Ekadashi. I want to tell you in short about this. The best Ekadashi in the whole calendar is on 30th of May. This year, it may change every year, of course. It's called Bhima Ekadashi or Pandava Ekadashi. Both are equal. Now, why is this Ekadashi so important? This Ekadashi is so important because if by mistake you have not performed full Ekadashi on any of the other Ekadashis, that should be how many? Should be 24? Around 24-25 Ekadashis in a year. If you perform this Ekadashi Nirjal, then it's as good as you are having performed all the other Ekadashis. How it happened was, Bhima, you all know about the second, well actually he's third, but after Yudhishthir Bhima. So this Bhima was a huge big character, great devotee of course, in the true sense of kilos, and he could not remain hungry for more than 4 hours. So he had to have huge quantities of food, prasadam, after 4 hours. Otherwise, there will be churning of the ocean in his stomach, of all the acids and everything, and there would be tremendous effect. So he went to Vedvyas, his grandfather, or technically granduncle, and he told Vedvyasji in private, all my brothers, my mother, even Draupadi, everyone is performing Ekadashi, even the younger ones, Nakul, Sadev, I can't perform Ekadashi. I'm feeling very guilty that even on Ekadashi I quietly go and eat up something, and everybody looks upon me as if, you know, I have violated that Ekadashi. What should I do? So Vedvyas said, just don't think of food and you won't feel hungry. So, no, I did that, but you see the thing inside, the stomach is not controlled. What can I do there? So, and they don't drink water even on the Ekadashi. And I can't live without water. I must have constant water. So Vedvyas was very intelligent. He says, you must have constant water, is it? Okay. Then you do one thing. On this particular Ekadashi, which happens to be now on the 30th of May 2004, that was more than 5,000 years ago, he said, go and rest in a cool river, because if the water is there on your body, you will have the association of water. It is mentioned here in the Bhagavatam, see, clearly. The tribulations, the living entity is subjected to necessities of water, of body, mind, senses, and the Panch Mahabhuta. So, Bhima, by resting in this water, he said, you can go up to your neck in water, but don't go to your mouth. Otherwise, you will drink the water. Then you will have the association of water, you will feel cool, and nothing will happen, and 24 hours will pass through. So, Bhima, for 24 hours, remained submerged like an iceberg, one tenth above and 9/10 below, in this water. And like an iceberg he was comfortable and he did not melt. So he just remained there. That Ekadashi is known as Bhima Ekadashi. So if we can, many of us, due to traveling or due to what, some reason or the other, have not performed Ekadashi fully during the whole year, all the proper Ekadashis, at least on the 30th of May, Nirjal Ekadashi, 24 hours. Preferably, one should chant 64 rounds. Because you are not eating, you can save time, you know, whatever you are doing. And the process of eating, evacuating, this, that, and the rest of it.
So nothing will happen. You will sleep also less, because more you eat, the more you sleep normally. So because you will sleep less, it is easier for you to chant, and therefore you can easily chant 64 rounds. So this is very important, because today is the 22nd, and just 8 days from now we should all enjoy this. I'll tell you one little story what happened. This Bhima Ekadashi was coming. This must have been when Radhanand Maharaj was staying with us a long time ago. And then I told Radhanand Maharaj, "Radhanand Maharaj, there is one problem with this Bhima Ekadashi. The worst part is, you know, I can go on till 12 hours, but after 12 hours it becomes very difficult. What should we do?" And he happened to be staying with us. So he said, "Let's do one thing. When that 12th hour is coming on, after that, you just tell me." So I said, "All right." So when that hour came, so I told Radhanand Maharaj, "Radhanand Maharaj, it's time now." So he said, "Get the kartals, get the mrudang." So for 12 hours we had non-stop kirtan right through the night. From and we were so surprised that when it was morning, when we saw the light of the day, early morning, we felt fresh. Radhanand Maharaj said, "Now we should have a bath and immediately go to the temple and attend Mangala Arati." So on 31st of May, everybody should attend Mangala Arati. This is the tradition that Radhanand Maharaj has said. I'll have to follow it myself, because that was so wonderful. 24 hours you do cleansing of the body, because in Nature Cure, the doctors say, Nature Cure specialists, that the wisest thing you can do to improve your body, also your mind and soul, is to fast. By refraining from just stopping eating and drinking water, the natural forces within, the agni of your stomach, gets strong again. So your digestion will improve over a period. Your whole system gets rest, because if you keep on eating throughout, then you never give rest to your stomach and so on. And this way your whole system definitely starts improving, and in fact the best part is the toxins of the body start burning instead of the food, because the agni is there in your stomach, so it's going to get sensation of cooking. So it's better to cook out all the unwanted anarthas, residues. And the best part is that if you perform this, you'll find that lust, anger and greed don't come near you. So very often devotees ask, "What should I do to avoid this lust, anger and greed coming in me?" Because it's very difficult. So if you perform this Nirjal Ekadashi, I have observed over and over again on Nirjal Ekadashis, that you just don't have the tendency or capacity or whatever it is to have lust, anger and greed. And therefore it is stated that some of the great souls, they leave their bodies also when they die, when they leave this world, on an Ekadashi. Because that is the most appropriate day, because there is no lust, anger and greed. It's easy to remember Krishna. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, please.
Yes, I must be right at all. Because when we started coming to the temple in America, we only came for the holiday.
Yes.
We didn't come for philosophy. Prabhupada. This on?
Haripod? Is that mic on?
We didn't come for philosophy. We came for the halava. We came for the prasad. So we're like those, that dog. That was unfair of Giriraj to say that, because even the dog takes prasad, he's making advancement.
Yes.
So whatever you have to do to tempt the living, conditioned living entities into the temple. Of course,
yes.
Dogs shouldn't be in the temple.
Yes.
But I'll tell you a nice story about a dog. and Prabhupada. There is the mango grove, which is outside.
On the way to Mayapur?
Yeah, on the way to Mayapur.
On the left side, yes.
Yeah, on the left side. Prabhupada used to stop there, and we'd have a picnic.
Yes, wonderful
put
place.
Put down a cloth, and we had it at Prabhupada's table, and we'd all sit in rows in on each side of the cloth, and Prabhupada was at the head table, had his chokhi, and we'd serve him. And there was a dog one time, lurking around behind Prabhupada, coming up, and we'd chasing him away, and he'd run away, and he'd come back again. And we'd chase him away, and he'd come back, and it was always behind Prabhupada. Prabhupada never looked at the dog. And the dog came up, maybe he was 10 feet away from Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was eating, and he put his hand in the rasgulla bowl. He took a rasgulla, and he went like that, over his head, and the dog jumped up, grabbed the rasgulla, and went away. Prabhupada never even looked at him. He just fell right into the dog's mouth.
Yes, I've heard this story.
Yes.
I've heard this.
It was wonderful to see.
Wonderful to see, yes. Wonderful. But the problem with, I fully agree with you. We also serve animals outside, cows especially, prasadam, and dogs or whoever, living entity. But this particular dog, why Giriraj Maharaj might have not wanted him in the congregation, was he was he was worried that it might have rabies, a disease. That was the only problem. Of course, the right solution would have been to take him to a doctor, veterinarian, and take care. But what is happening nowadays, Bhavanand Prabhuji, is that correct? I remember we met last 1980 or 81. You had just come from Australia. It's very, very wonderful to see you. As soon as I saw you, I wanted. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. And are we? Oh, wonderful. Hare Bol. Please. Mike up.
You can't fast your way out of lust, anger, and greed. You can only conquer over those inebrieties by chanting Hare Krishna.
Yes.
So the real purpose of the Ekadasi is to chant more, because I've seen devotees in the West on this Bhim Ekadasi. They lay around all day, and all they do is think about water. And they're very proud if they do it, but I said, all you're doing is thinking about water. You're not chanting Hare Krishna. You're just, oh, I have a headache. Oh, I'm hungry. Oh, I'm thirsty. That's not the purpose is to relieve yourself of these external things so that you can increase your chanting.
Yes.
True. And that way, you'll conquer over your...
That's very true. Very true. Thank you very much. We deeply appreciate. So tomorrow we are all very, very keenly looking forward to hearing from Bhavanand Prabhuji. At least I was informed, and I was very keen to come. I was in a marriage. Hare Krishna. And you, I was in the marriage in our Jew temple. There were two marriages, one of a devotee and one of my niece. They were not marrying each other, separate. Sorry? Very unfortunate for the niece. Hare Krishna. If I had known earlier, I think I would have missed both the marriages. I wouldn't have minded. Because marriages are, Okay, that goes on, but more important is listening to Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.